National Call for Citizens Climate Lobby. And before we get started, I would just like to say hello and welcome to all of our new chapters. We have new chapters in Corpus Christi, Texas, Sugarland, Texas, Midcoast, Maine, Florida, Pensacola, Florida, the Villages. We just heard about Gila County, Arizona is joining us, and we have a couple of new international chapters. We have a new chapter in Hamilton, Ontario, and CCL Zambia. Welcome, everybody. We're really, really excited for you to be on the call. Now, as many of you may have noticed, I am not, in fact, Mark Reynolds. No, I am Danny Richter. I am the Vice President of Government Affairs here at CCL, and you may be wondering, why is Danny here and not Mark? Well, as you know, we emphasize listening a lot here at CCL, and so we're listening to you, and we heard a lot of you saying you just want to see more hair on these international calls, and that is something I can deliver, and so that's listening to you, that's why I'm here. So this beard's for you, CCL. Of course, that's not the real reason why Mark is here. Mark is in Boise, Idaho. He's with the Pacific Northwest Conference. So we miss you, Mark, and we miss all the people at the Northwest Conference. I'll try not to screw up. Last month, we heard from Dr. Celia Paris, both about how people take cues and make their decisions based on what the literature calls elites, so that would be elected members of Congress. And we also learned how, despite widespread rumors to the contrary, bipartisanship not only is not dead, but it is in fact, dare I say, sexy. And so we're going to be continuing on that theme, this time actually listening to what you're saying. Nobody in CCL is so shallow as to want more hair on the national calls. So we're going to hear more about bipartisanship. And so we're really excited to have, in that theme, Joan Blades on the call. Welcome. We're really excited to have you here. Joan Blades is one of the co-founders of MoveOn.org. And in a more recent project she'll be talking about with us today is Living Room Conversations. Her TED Talk outlining the inspiration for this and a little bit about that program now has over 1 million views, which is quite an accomplishment. So we're very excited to have her on the call. And I will stop talking now, and Joan, invite you to speak. So Joan, we're excited to have you here.
Can you? I'm muted by the host. Okay. I'm unmuted. This is good. All right.
Yep, we can hear you.
Wonderful to be here. Thank you for having me. Love what you are doing. And as I tell my story, you'll kind of understand why you are one of my favorite groups of people. Many people have forgotten that Move On started back in 98, midway in the impeachment scandal. And we wrote a one-sentence petition: Congress must immediately censure the president and move on to pressing issues facing the nation. That was actually written so that a huge number of Americans could agree with it. I wrote it so my conservative cousins might possibly put it in, because you could love Clinton or hate Clinton and still agree that the best thing for the country was to censure and move on. Then, as time passed by and as a leader of Move On, I saw the fight moving back and forth, and we'd win some and we'd lose some. But I'm actually a mediator by origin and inclination. And that's where I have tried to go. So as far back as 2004, I started working with a group called Reuniting America, where I had the opportunity to work with and talk to people, leaders on the right, and really get to know them and to become friends with many of them. And it was a great experience. And the reason I wanted to do this is I live in Berkeley, California. It's where I was born. And I really wanted to know, you know, why people were seeing things so very differently from the way I was seeing things. And this allowed me to better understand that. And in particular, I wanted to understand about why conservatives were not concerned about climate. And I was, in 2005, I was able to have some really good conversations about climate with people that were conservative. By 2008, 2009, it was actually harder to have that kind of conversation. And that was the inspiration for Living Room Conversations, because it is actually our personal relationships that really allow us to get outside of our what has become an increasingly separate narrative. In the US, the division between left and right has gotten more impenetrable rather than less, because the media and leadership too often is rewarded for focusing on our differences and not on the places where we agree and how we can work together. So as a founder of Move On, I've seen that people are smart, they're caring, and that if you give them an opportunity, they can do great things together. And so I believe in the grassroots, and I believe the grassroots have a huge capacity, and that it's actually going to have to come from us to create the foundation for leaders that are good about finding solutions, and to insist that the media provide us something more than the fight. And the Living Room Conversations pilot back in 2010, 2011 was about energy/climate, where we, you know, rather rapidly learned that we should have a conversation about energy, because people that don't believe in climate were less likely to show up to a conversation about that included climate. But if you have in that conversation people that care about it, that comes up naturally enough. And once people start to connect, it makes a huge difference. And, you know, I always have to, especially in university settings, remind people, science tells us facts don't convince people. We don't really start listening to each other until we're in relationship with each other. So what Living Room Conversations is a very simple, common sense opportunity for people to really hear each other. It's two friends with different viewpoints. Each invite two friends for a structured conversation. And there are conversation agreements that everyone agrees with easily. It's basically what we learned in kindergarten. Take turns, be respectful, own your part of the conversation, be curious. That's the core of those agreements, and people are great at doing that. And then the structure of the conversation is such that it starts by giving you a chance to get to know each other a little and talk a little bit about your deeper values, so that by the time you're talking about the topic at hand, you have a sense that you kind of like this person or these people, because it's six people in a classic living room conversation. And these don't require facilitators, because as a founder of Move On, you know, the dream is that this can become a massive movement. And so we want people to be able to own this and run with this. And then the close of a living room conversation is an opportunity to reflect on what you've just heard. Has anything changed for you? Did you see some common ground? Are there things you want to do together going forward? And the reality is that just having a relationship is profoundly powerful. One of my good friends in Utah, when I first met him, climate was not something on his list of concerns. And that changed over time, because his friend Ben and I, he cares about us, and he knew it was a top issue for us. And it also gave us the space to talk about it, where I could say, well, you know, even if there's only a 10% chance that we are destroying the capacity of the planet to support future generations, I find that unconscionable. I don't let my kids play Russian roulette. And that gave him the space to think about it. At least, you know, that's the way he described it to me. And he also caused me to realize that this is our progressive end time story. So it's a two-way street, this whole thing. And he's more interested in climate now because he cares about me. And I, you know, when you care about someone, you care about what they care about. And you start looking into it. And he's starting to see biblical references. So it's a transformation on multiple levels. In the Living Room Conversations, we have over 60 topics, because the reality is that if we convinced everyone in leadership in DC that climate is the top priority tomorrow, I still don't think it would be anything close to adequate, because look at what they've done with healthcare. Look at what happens with the budget. We actually need to be collaborating and working together so that we have everyone's best ideas in the room. We've got the agility of being able to stop doing things that don't work and start something. When you're in an adversarial mode, you don't have that kind of capacity and creativity. So I don't care what people talk about on some levels. I want these relationships to begin to bring us back to this space where we care about each other and we're trying to meet everyone's needs. And one of the one of the kind of wonderful things I'm seeing with Living Room Conversations is it's becoming part of faith communities' culture. Some faith communities are doing monthly Living Room Conversations. Saratoga, I came in and the city had big signs every fourth Tuesday of the week. They have Living Room Conversations. And that kind of shift in community is beautiful. So we need to build the local community. But the other thing we're doing is we need to reweave our national community because, you know, we need to have not this sense of the coasts and the interior of the country. So we have started having video Living Room Conversations last year, and they went really well. And so we need to reweave our communities locally and nationally. And that's something, you know, this is a major invitation to folks at CCL to say, yes, let's have this conversation across the country. I co-hosted a conversation with the co-founder of Tea Party Patriots, and it was amazing. His friends, my friends, and I really learned about some places where we can work together. So in Berkeley, sometimes I have people say, well, you know, I don't have any conservative friends. And I'm pretty sure it goes the other way in certain parts of the country. And even the people that have friends with the different viewpoint, they're often anxious about having the living room conversation because they've seen so much bad behavior, loss of relationship. You know, most people, when I'll go in a room, say, how many people have had a relationship harmed or lost due to partisanship? And they'll raise their hands. And there are people that, you know, have tears in their eyes that tell me about relationships lost. So we now have something called Mismatch that we're working on, kind of a political dating service. So we can help people find people if they don't have. And, you know, sometimes a friend can, you know, I wouldn't naturally have known Mark, but someone introduced me to him. Because said, Tea Party co-founder, Move On co-founder, they should meet. They should have. So you may find something that way, or maybe you have a school friend from high school, from college, from back home for what? Because we can do this by video, there's all sorts of ways we can get together now. And it's the piece I always have to remember is this is actually really fun. Think of all the people that spend lots of money to have adventures. You can have this adventure in your own living room, in your cafe, in your church hall, in your synagogue, wherever it is, we can do it. We, you know, it's fundamentally up to us to create this foundation which good leadership can lead from. And, you know, I think you guys are actually the leaders, and I'm grateful for that. So I was told 12 minutes. I think I'm on it. And then questions. So
all right, Joan, that was fantastic. Thank you for that. Really appreciate it. One thing I just want to make sure that I was clear on this so that everybody else can be clear on this. You said that you have something called Mismatch. And this is actually a quote-unquote dating service for people of different viewpoints to find each other. Is that correct?
Yes, we have it for the schools right now. We've got it for the libraries. We're working on having it for everybody. Right now, the thing to do is sign up at Living Room Conversations and express an interest. And sometimes we can match people right now by hand. But this is in the works because people want it. But we need to, you know, kind of help each other make this happen.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you for that. CCL folks, if you could put your questions into the chat, I'll ask Ricky to field those and we'll pull them out for Joan. I have one other question while those come in. And so you said this today, and you said it on your TED talk, that after you talk with people, you find out, hey, I kind of like this person, and that's really key to starting these living room conversations. But I was curious, are you finding that after doing this, that you're better able to do that in a non-structured environment, spontaneously? Are you better at finding good in people in daily lives, or are alumni of these living rooms conversations, are they able to just kind of like people a little bit better in their communities?
I think the answer is yes. It's for a long time I said, okay, this is for friends, but family, you know, it's like, family are known for breaking the rules, right? But the reality is the conversation guidelines are great for talking to anyone, including family. And we started having people coming up and saying, you know, I had this, you know, way better conversation with my dad, or I had this conversation with my nephew, and it was the living room conversations that had gotten them to the point where that kind of conversation was happening. So we need to be able to, you know, kind of capture the stories and do a bunch more research. But we ended up doing a friends and family guide simply because, you know, we can't, in a living room conversation, we can create a set of expectations, which people are really very good about living up to. But when we're out in the world, we still can live up to it so that we are happy with our part of the conversation. And that's something that's worth.
Yeah, that's great. And it's super interesting that you felt there was you had to create a guide specifically for family members, and because family members like to break rules. I think probably most of us recognize that. So that's super interesting. We have a question from Paul Thompson. What is your best example of finding common ground?
Probably the best one for me was when I was in that conversation with Mark Meckler and his friends and my friends, and I had not realized that there was deep agreement that there are too many people in prison, the war on drugs is not a success, and we have to use evidence-based practices in the criminal justice system. This was in 2013, and one of the really encouraging things is there's some really good work going on the right and the left around this. I am sorry to say that this current administration, it's like going back to last century, but there's enough understanding, I hope and believe, that we will, you know, get back on track.
Great. And Ricky, you just muted me because you can hear that Mira is kind of waking up for a nap. So maybe, Ricky, you could pull up some of these questions from
exactly.
Volunteers.
Exactly. Yep. Thanks. I was trying to chat you that. Okay. Joan, I think one thing that folks really wanted to know, and we probably won't be able to get to all these questions, got a lot of fantastic questions, but we will get these questions to you, Joan, and maybe you could get some responses later and through email to some folks. But a lot of folks like, you know, how do we get more information about this? And I put the livingroomconversations.org website in the chat, but maybe tell folks like what's available there for them.
All right. Living Room Conversations, if you sign up, you get a note about once a week that tells you what we think's most interesting right now. We have over 60 topics listed there because, and it includes energy and climate as separate conversations, depending on who you're inviting to the conversation, because you wanna find a conversation that interests whoever you're talking to. We also have the American Dream, Guns and Responsibility, Digital Dialogues. And we have a whole faith community section because faith communities are, you know, love thy neighbor is a central theme to all the major faith traditions. And that is a new and growing area of Living Room Conversations. We have video Living Room Conversations that are recorded, so you can go look at one if you want to. It's actually got a great deal of content because though we are mostly volunteer and a bunch of part-time people doing this, we've been doing it for a little while now. And last year, there was a heightened recognition that we need to get very intentional about making relationships with people that we don't understand. So I hope people will sign up there and, you know, start to work with us, because it's an open source project. It's yours to use however you want, but we're hoping people will feedback in so we learn from everybody that uses these materials.
Great.
And then we share and amplify.
Oh, sorry, didn't mean to interrupt. I think the other sort of general question is to look at all these and try to combine them into a question would be, you know, what about the constraints that we have with, either, you know, too much money in politics or things are just too polarized? How would you speak to that for just a moment?
Living Room Conversations are our first step. We certainly have a money in politics conversation. And we're looking to do a high profile one actually in the coming month on money in politics that we would be sharing and putting up in the media in some significant ways. The reality is, once you get to the point where you have an understanding, like Mark and I and friends, we ended up speaking, you know, writing op-eds, speaking on stages. Once you have an unlikely friendship, that's often a good way to elevate an issue and remind people. Years ago, before Living Room Conversations, I went visiting with Michelle Combs of the Christian Coalition about net neutrality on the Hill. Because, you know, here was a place where, and people went, what? Move on in the Christian Coalition? What are they doing here? You know, what would those leaders be doing together? So when you, you know, go to visit an office and you surprise them in some way, it can be very productive.
Great. And I am unmuted now. I think that things are calming down. So we also have had questions about how to connect with this, how to connect with this opportunity. And Ricky has put in the chat the website, www.livingroomconversations.org. So I'm sure that's the best place for people to get started. Anything you'd like to orient people to when they visit that website, Joan, for getting started?
I'm hoping it orients itself very well, but I will note that one other thing that's there for people that are a little anxious about just diving in and having their own conversation, every other week we have a call where people that want to organize can talk with people that already have. And if there was the desire to do a CCL-specific call, we could certainly do that too.
That is an offer. That's a very interesting offer. Thank you. Thank you for mentioning that. I do think we would have lots of people who would be interested in that. There was also a technical question from Sabrina. What would be the time commitment? Let's say that somebody wanted to have a living room conversation. How long should they expect that to last? And also she asked about follow-up. How long would that take?
Thank you. That is a great question. In a living room, typically, we want to have 2 hours because, you know, you want to have snacks, you want to relax. And we've had to kick people out like 2 hours later. In Utah, we had the climate conversation. And two of these guys, you know, they hadn't had a chance to talk to. And so they were there till 11. It's like, you guys got to, it's time. So optimally 2 hours. The reality is, at a conference, we'll often do it in an hour. And that is, people feel like they didn't get enough typically. Video, Zoom living room conversations, 90 minutes is what we typically schedule, because there's something about video that it's not as, you know, you just want it to be a little bit shorter for that reason. But then people can have the conversations continue and have, you know, have future conversations if they choose. It can be a
Well, Joan, that's fantastic. We got to a lot of questions here, but there are still many more. And so you're coming back. And on March 29th, you're going to be joining us for CCU, Citizens Climate University, to continue this. Brett Cease has put that into the chat. So if people are interested in putting that into their calendar now, it'll be on Thursday, March 29th at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time. And we're really excited to have you here today. We're really excited that you were able to come back. So thank you, Joan, so much. Really appreciate your time and your perspective and your work. You're welcome to stay on the call if you'd like to stand for the rest of the call, but we do understand that it's a Saturday and you probably had other things planned. So if you'd like to stay, you're welcome to. If you need to hop off, we're very appreciative for the time you've been able to spend with us.
Well, thank you so much. It's wonderful the work you're doing, and it's my top issue, so I'm grateful.
All right. Well, thank you so much. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks again. And now we're going to have Lene come on. She's got something to talk about. So, Lene, could you unmute yourself, and what have you got to tell us?
Yeah. Hey, everyone. I wanted to give you a heads up that we're going to be having a little bit of March monthly donor madness going on for CCL in the coming weeks. We want to increase our sustained giving by $7,000 a month in new revenue, which is not tax deductible, to cover CCL operating expenses such as congressional briefings, DC meet and greets, and office space. Much larger office space, to be exact. Right now, our DC staff are squished into a very small space, and they have no conference room available for when NGOs come over to visit. Not good. We want to be fully prepared to support a carbon fee and dividend bill all the way to passage in Congress. And this drive is going to help us get more into that optimal position. There will be an email coming out this Wednesday, and that'll have a link that you can follow to donate. So I'd ask that you keep your eyes open for that and consider donating. I would greatly appreciate it. Now, these monthly donations are not tax deductible since they're going to CCL, which is a 501c4 nonprofit. If you're already making a donation to CCL, thank you. If you would like to increase your monthly gift, the best way to do that would be to create an additional monthly gift for that amount so that we can see how we're doing for our drive. Okay, thank you so much for any help you can lend here and for all that each of you are doing to ensure a healthy climate for many generations to come. That's all for me, Danny. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Lene. And I'll just put in a word. As somebody who is in that DC office, we do have two offices, and it can be frustrating. We have to move. We have to move the surfboard and then the bread off the table, and just to make space for people to come in. We have four people in one room. We have three people in another. So it is a bit tight. So thank you, Lene, for that, and thank you. You all for what you've done already and making that work possible. So what have we been up to in 2018 so far? Well, so far in 2018, you have published 623 pieces of media. That's op-eds, editorials, and letters to the editor. Even though we're still on the early side of our spring lobby drive, you've already had 50 meetings with Congress. That's fantastic. Almost 6,000 personal letters have been delivered to members of Congress, and this one always blows my mind. We have 41,000 more members than we did at this time last year. 41,000. It's an amazing organization. Another thing that we've added this year, we have 87 new endorsements, and this is great. One thing that I don't think we have done the best job of advertising is, did you know that you can print out endorsements for specific sectors, like your faith groups, like national security and the media? And did you know that you could print out all the endorsements that exist in your district or in your state? Well, actually, you can. To do this, you just go to CCL Community. You click on the Take Action tab at the top. In the left side bar, you click on Seek Endorsements. And then in that page, you're going to click on the tab that says Endorsement Reports. So again, this is in CCL Community, the Take Action tab at the top of the page, Seek Endorsements in the left sidebar, and the tab that says Endorsement Reports. These ready-to-use reports may be useful to have with you in your spring lobby drive meetings with your members of Congress, and they may also be useful for you to have on hand in the events you're going to plan for Earth Day. So that actually is a U.S. action, so I will use that to segue into our actions. So our CCL Canada actions, number one, reaffirm with your group the five levers of political will and aim to be in the CCCL 50 Club. Number two, help us grow CCL Canada in 2018. Make commitments by filling in a survey, which is available on your action sheet. And number three, hone your letter to the editor writing skills. For the U.S., number one action is calculate the impact of carbon fee and dividend on your household using the new carbon fee and dividend calculator. Number two, plan an effective, eventful Earth Day. And number three, laser talk practice the laser talk in your action sheet, which describes the carbon fee and dividend calculator. I want to talk a little bit more about the carbon fee and dividend calculator because this is something I'm really excited about. This is something that came out of my work as Vice President of Research. This is a build-out of the Household Impact Study. Now, I was excited about the Household Impact Study because that was able to provide estimates of districts by district, who ends up ahead, who ends up behind in our policy, and slicing and dicing different groups of interest within a particular district. Well, what this calculator does is it enables you to provide an estimate, not down to the district level, but down to the individual level. And to me, that's just blows my mind. So that blows my mind. But another thing, I think a lot about learning styles. How do people learn? Are you an audio learner? Are you a visual learner? Or are you learning by being interactive? Well, this new tool is going to enable us to reach a whole new set of learners, really interactive learners. And for those who we've already gotten to, it's going to enable them to re-engage with the policy and I think see it in a new light. So they're going to be able to understand it on a much deeper level. So I think this is going to be an extremely useful tool to you before your spring lobby drive meetings with your members of Congress, before the events that you're going to plan during Earth Day. I think that this could really help you reach a lot of new people. And before I finish talking about this, I do want to highlight that this tool was not my idea. It was the idea of Rick Knight. Rick Knight, when he came up with this idea, he was a volunteer. He is now our research coordinator as of January. This was his idea, and the tool, which once you practice using it, I think you'll find it is really, really easy to use, very clear, and that's the work of two other volunteers, Brian Hermson in Lincoln, Nebraska, and Elena Kopa in Blacksburg, Virginia, and they're the volunteer developer and designer who works their butts off to make sure that this was an easy-to-use tool, something that you could use on your mobile phone, say, as you're tabling, and all of that. The fact that it was a volunteer idea and that two volunteers had such a huge, Olympian view in making it happen, that just highlights to me how much CCL, that's Rick Knight, how much CCL remains a volunteer-driven organization, and our best ideas really still come from the field. So thank you to Rick, to Elena, and to Brian. Very excited about this. Now, the second action was to plan an effective, eventful Earth Day. Now, remember that April is always our biggest opportunity for op-eds. Earth Day happens in April, and people are looking, media outlets are looking for stories around that. So they want you. And to be able to give the media what they want, you need to start planning this month. And so as you begin your planning, I would just remind everybody that we have five levers of political will: grassroots, grass tops, media, lobbying, and chapter development. And I think of these as, you know, the lever on one of those old slot machines that you pull down. And, we like to say if one lever is stuck, you can either pull harder or you can try a different lever. Well, in April, because of Earth Day, all of those levers are going to be newly greased. And so they're going to be asking people to pull them. And so this will be a particularly good time to think about in your group. And don't be afraid to divide and conquer. Don't be afraid to focus. People have different skills. They have different interests. Allow the people in your group to follow the passion and spend some time talking about what would you be most excited, what leader would you be most excited about tugging on today. So that's a tool that you can use as we go into Earth Day, our biggest month for op-ed actions. It's a big month. So we're going to start closing up the call. And again, as we reflect on April and Earth Day, I just want to highlight that we have a better story to tell than we have ever had before. The caucus, which it's easy to forget, is just 2 years old, has quadrupled in size in a year. And even with this relatively brief history, the caucus is starting to be an important voice in the climate debate. Last year, the caucus played a significant role in beating back attempts to eliminate the requirements of the Defense Department consider climate change in its operations assessments. Caucus members have also proposed bipartisan legislation to advance clean energy technologies that will reduce greenhouse gas emissions. One example is the recently introduced Challenges and Prizes Climate Act, for Climate Act. And there was also legislation that to extend tax credit for a variety of orphaned clean energy technologies that was part of the budget agreement, and that is now law. So something that was originated from a Republican member, in fact, on the Climate Solutions Caucus is now law. Those are some really great concrete victories that we can point to from the Climate Solutions Caucus. And if you missed it, on February 28th, we published a blog by our very own Flannery Winchester about the recent League of Conservation voters scores. Those had come out, and these successes of the caucus do show up in those scores. The average score on that LCB card for Republicans is 11% higher for Republicans on the caucus than it is for the Republican caucus as a whole. So, this is even though only 5 of those 35 votes that the League of Conservation scored, we think are directly related to climate, you're still getting an 11 percentage point rise. Another extenuating circumstance is that some of those votes happened after Irma, when some of the Republicans on the caucus were back in their districts talking to their constituents who had just survived a hurricane. And so their scores would be a bit lower. So we have some pretty clear evidence that not only is being on the Climate Solutions Caucus related, causing Republicans to have a higher vote total on environmental issues than the Republican caucus as a whole, they are extending to votes that I think are not just on climate. So there might be something to this approach of engaging in respectful dialogue with people we might disagree with and finding things that we actually like about people. The last thing I'll highlight about the caucus is that the lone Freedom Caucus member on the Climate Solutions Caucus has one of the best scores. So, of course, that's Congressman Sanford. And so I just want to highlight that because in case you believe that people, Republicans on the Freedom Caucus, are ungettable, they are gettable, and they can actually be leaders on the climate. So those are some things I want to highlight, and it's facts like these, it's this story that gets me really excited for the June conference. For those of you who have been to the June conference, you know that one of the things that I get to do in the June conference is I get to stand up in front of all of you. Sometimes some staff members choose to mock my hairstyles, but that's okay. It's okay. And I get to give you a legislative update. And I already have a lot more concrete, really tangible things good news, like the ones I just shared, to share with you in June. And I know there are some other things that are brewing that I am hopeful to have a lot more to share with you in June. So I'm hopeful that I'll be just able to see a lot of you in June. I'm excited and already starting to think about the talk that I might give. That's all going to begin with what you discuss next, getting ready for April, our biggest month for action. So that's the call for this month. Ricky, if you could unmute the lines, and we'll all say goodbye to each other. To everybody.
Hi, everybody. Back to the
display, but audio only. Now we have video only audio.
Okay, everybody wait.
I don't think it
was audio. Audio is off. Goodbye, goodbye, goodbye. Bye. Bye. Bye.
I think whoever's operating it can shift the focus. I just want to point out, I was watching the.
Olympia, Washington, you're on TV.
And that's interesting to me, too. I would be willing to do this conversation
thing. Most likely.
And they have a structure. Certainly, Jennifer, I was thinking even I could email Jennifer Sarr and ask her if she has some people but the thing is she's not very far from
right. I've got an email.
Okay, it's enough fun to kiss count. Goodbye, everybody. Have a good day. Bye-bye.